Content warning. This episode contains swearing, mentions of suicide, and a reference to pussy hats. Additionally, we discuss an actor whose last name is technically the D slur, although it isn't used as such. We just don't want to blindside y'all. Big thanks to Danny the Spoon Lord and Janiyah Riley, our Masters in Hushian Analysis recipients on Patreon. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Our intro theme song, Sunbanger, is by @_tittle on Instagram. Our outro theme is by JoJo Funk McLovin, who can be found at funkmclovin.bandcamp.com. Enjoy the episode.
Sounds like Homestuck.
Sounds like Homestuck. Hey, this sounds like Homestuck. Do you think it could, like, potentially be phrased in such a way where you could, like, ask a question about whether or not something is related to the body of media hosted at mspadventures.com? It's almost like you could say something like,
what it Homestuck?
No, that sounds like a stupid idea.
When it Homestuck?
How it Homestuck?
How it Homestuck?
Why it Homestuck? Why? Why, Homestuck? Why? Why have you done this to me? Get out of my head.
Why?
I'm done. I want to be done. Let me off the ride, Andrew Hussey, please.
Hi, I'm wearing a fake beard pretending to be an old man.
And I'm practically perfect in every way.
And I just got mine stolen.
Sorry.
No, that's funny. That's funny. Listen, no, that's funny. Let's go with it.
And welcome to Will It Homestuck, a podcast where we put media in the Homestuck blender to see what comes out. I'm Bucky, and I use he, here, and they, them pronouns, and you can find me at raddifferent on Twitter.
And I'm Self. I use she, her, or they, them pronouns. You can find me on Twitter at selfofbreath12. Or at AO3 at self_of_breath, or occasionally on the Will It Homestuck Discord.
And my name is Winter, and I use they, dame pronouns, or she, her. And you can't find me unless you go into your bathroom in the middle of the night by saying, Skimbles, Shanks, the railway cats, the cats of the railway train, 3 times in a row.
Wow.
This week, we are covering Mary Poppins, the 1964 Disney movie. This one's been on the docket for a minute, because Sylph of Breath is actually, I believe, our first patron?
I think so.
And this has been sitting for a minute. We are tackling this, and I was a little apprehensive, because I haven't watched this movie since I was a kid, and I was, like, pleasantly surprised at how well it held up and how absolutely buck wild this movie is.
It's definitely a movie that has a start, middle, and an ending that is entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Minty and I watched it together last night, but Sylph, you are a Mary Poppins connoisseur, as I am led to believe.
Pretty much. It's been my favorite movie since I was 1 or 2 years old, so... I also watched it last night, but I watch it fairly regularly, so last night was just a little refresher.
And you also sang the whole thing while you were watching it, it sounds like.
I did, so if I sound a little bit hoarse, that's why.
That's okay. You were having fun.
It's kind of involuntary. I can't not sing along with Mary Poppins, so it is what it is.
I forgot it was a musical. Like, I knew there were songs in it, but I forgot it was, like, the type of musical where they're singing most of the time, and there's a lot of, like, important plot stuff that happens via song. I was like, oh yeah, I missed that.
Well, I mean, the movie is practically perfect in every way.
Yep.
Okay, so we now have a prepared written summary, because that's a thing we're doing now, because we're prepared.
Yeah.
At the top of the film, we see Mary Poppins fixing her makeup while she rests in a cloud. The narrative framing device zooms in via Bert, and we arrive at the Banks house. The children have run away from Katie Nana, causing her to quit. Mrs. Banks comes in singing about suffragettes, cueing the song Sister Suffragette.
Mr. Banks comes home and decides he needs to pick the next nanny. He's a man, so he's smarter and more capable, which he conveys via The Life I Lead. The children sing about the perfect nanny for them, and show their father the advertisement they wrote. He rips up their letter and throws it in the fire and sends them to bed.
The next morning, the nanny applicants line up outside the bank's house, but they're blown away in a massive gust of wind. Mary Poppins arrives immediately after with the kid's letter and essentially hires herself. She then goes upstairs and leads the children in a game of cleaning, singing Spoonful of Sugar. Later, Mary takes the children out, they jump into Bert's chalk picture and have a nice outing in the country, with Bert and Mary duetting Jolly Holiday, and Mary, Bert, and the bedazzled band singing Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It rains and they go home. Mary sings the children to sleep to stay awake.
The next day, Mary Poppins is about to take the children to go shopping when Andrew the dog tells them that Uncle Albert is in trouble. They go take care of Albert instead, leading to the song I Love to Laugh. Mary Poppins then sings to the children about the little old bird woman in Feed the Birds.
When they return, Mr. Banks yells at Mary Poppins for being silly, but she tricks him into taking the kids on an outing to the bank with him. The kids go to the bank with their father. Michael wants to spend his tuppence to feed the birds, but through a rousing rendition of Fidelity Fiduciary Bank, the bank manager takes it from him. Michael takes it back and causes a scene, potentially crashing the British economy in the process.
The kids run away from the bank and meet Bert as a chimney sweep in the street. He makes them feel sorry for their dad and takes them home, intending to leave them with their family. Instead, Mrs. Banks asks him to watch them so she can go to her suffragette meeting.
The kids get sucked up the chimney just as Mary Poppins comes home, and they all party on the roof with the chimney sweeps, first singing Chim Chimney and then moving to Step in Time. Mr. Banks comes home mid-sweep song and the hullabaloo clears out. The kids apologize and give their dad the tuppence. Finally, Bert convinces him that his family is more important than his job or his status.
Mr. Banks is then summoned back to the bank, where he is fired. Again, this scene further reinforces the idea that a child yelling in a bank crashed the British economy. Mr. Banks is fired and snaps, leading him to tell jokes to the bank partners that he heard from his kids. He goes home and seemingly stays up all night fixing his kid's kite.
As Mary Poppins is packing to leave, the kids are sad. Mary assures them they will be okay, even as she seems to be reassuring herself that she will be okay. Mr. Banks takes the children out to fly a kite, MP leaves, and Mr. Banks gets his job back with a promotion because he made the previous owner of the bank die of laughter. And then everyone sings Let's Go Fly a Kite. Sorry, I felt that detail was important and it needed to be put.
No,
you're right. That was an important detail. Oh, and also then in the credits, I either forgot this or genuinely did not notice or care as a child, but Dick Van Dyke plays both Bert and the old man who's like the father who's in charge of the bank. And this was revealed to us via the credits in rearranging the letters of Dick Van Dyke's name from an anagram for Dick Van Dyke into Dick Van Dyke, which means that he's some sort of weird pseudo Voldemort who's like good, actually. But I was like, oh, huh. Yeah, I sure got more out of this movie when I was 23 years old instead of when I was 6.
It is a surprisingly good movie for its time.
I forgot that Disney movies were, like, good at one point. There was a point in time where Disney movies were good. Okay, all right. So now that we've done the summary, this is the first time we've, like, codified this in the explicit format of the podcast, but we're going to talk about on what aspect or axis of two aspects this story operates on. We've done this a couple of times. I think we did this on the Harry Potter episode. I think we might have done it in the Adventure Zone. Minty, you mentioned when we were talking about this in our server, or if you want to talk about your couple of specific examples that you gave.
Sure. I've just mostly been watching a lot of She-Ra through this pandemic. A lot of She-Ra. Don't at me. You can't at me. You'll never find me. It's just like a story that to me personally is like about hope and blood. And then like Avatar is about kind of like breath and
blood.
Breath and blood. And then Homestuck is a story about space and time. And those were just like a few of the examples that like I threw out there.
So Homestuck specifically says, like, all right, this is a story about the dichotomy between inevitable death and inevitable creation. Whereas, like, She-Ra is a story about perseverance through belief and faith and, like, tradition and the importance breaking it. Or, like, Avatar the Last Airbender has an explicit opposite similar to Homestuck, as you put it, where, like, it's freedom versus tradition.
Yeah, it's a story about that. Like, blood specifically, with we don't need to talk about She-Ra on this episode, actually.
Yeah, but so basically the conceit is, like, we've been sort of dancing around this in previous episodes where we're like, what aspect or aspects is this story revolve around or revolve between? And, like, Sylph, I kind of want to pick your brain on what you think that might be.
If any of you follow me on Twitter already, you may know that I just do classbecting of things for fun. So I did classbects for Mary Poppins months ago, long before I ever knew this was going to be a thing. And I tend to get attached and maybe get a little stubborn. So when I did those originally, I mean, this whole concept is very new, so it's kind of hard for me to, just based on my characters and their aspects, I don't know, it's kind of hard for me to think of it that way, because
you have your spreadsheets that you make and you construct your class specs around the character relations. Yeah. So it's less about the overarching plot and more about how these characters work.
Yeah,
it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, and it depends on, you know, the story and what it is, but it does tend to be more about the characters themselves. And I do try to consider, like, their role in the story, but and I guess also I'm pretty attached to, like, the dichotomy of, like, classes and aspects. So, I mean, I'm tempted to say, I don't want to spoil when we're actually revealing our class specs, but I'm very tempted to put it on the axis of Mary Poppins' aspect and the opposite of that. But the person with the aspect that's opposite of that is a very, very minor character who didn't even make the cut in terms of characters we're actually going to class spec for this. So
it sounds like we should jump into the class specs and then maybe loop back around to this at least. Mary Poppins is such a linchpin in the plot that, like, you can't talk about that without talking about her.
Sure, we can loop right back around with it. I have very strong opinions on this, but we don't need to take care of that now.
Do we want to just start out with the lady herself then?
I think that's the best place to start, honestly.
Okay. I don't want to go first because I have a galaxy brain take that is probably going to be interesting.
Oh boy.
I'm pointing at Sylph.
Yeah, I'm pointing at Sylph.
Okay, I will go first. I will say that depending on what you guys say, I might fight a little hard for this one. I think the rest of the ones I have some alternatives in mind, but I'm pretty dead set on my Mary Poppins classbect. So basically this is based on first of all, she presumably lives in the sky or something like that. Her powers are primarily to move things, shrink and grow people and objects. And also the fact that her sort of character arc is that she recognizes that her own personal attachments get in the way of her duty, which so she sacrifices that. She nurtures and cares for children, but her ultimate goal is to inspire the parents to nurture and care for their own children. And also, in some ways, she sort of gives me Alt Cali vibes, which I can elaborate on a little bit later. But I have her as a muse of space.
Ooh, okay, okay, okay.
And normally, when I do my class specs, I pretty rarely do master classes, and I usually will do a muse and a lord. But in this case, she is the only person who is she's at such a different level from the rest of the characters, just in terms of her actual, like, magical powers. And, you know, I mean, the movie is named after her. So she absolutely, I think, deserves to be a master class. And I think muse rather than lord, because, again, she comes when she's needed, sort of does what she needs to do to repair the family, and then she leaves. So she inspires others to do spacey stuff. So anyway, Muse of Space.
I feel like I should go after this. I have to go after that. If that's what you're going with. So I kind of took the same direction you did, Sylph, like, honestly, but twisted it a little bit. And I see where you're coming from with the space aspect. She does kind of like throw a lot of that around, but it's never really like intentional or concerted or its effort. And the one muse of space that we've seen in canon usually is kind of like the grand storyteller, someone who is off to the shadows. She kind of plays a little bit more of an active role in this case. Now, I'm not going with Lord, but I do have her down as a muse of breath, because there is a lot of breath imagery, like, associated with this character.
Yeah.
She takes almost every single person that she comes across, and she figures out the exact thing that they would need in order to be free. In the very, like, specific case, Mr. Banks, she, like, sets this man ablaze when it comes down to its life with just a single word. Like, inspires him to just sit inside of, like, a huge table of bankers and just have him burst out laughing because of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. But like, when it comes to like those kids as well, she throws like herself into these kids, but it's not really like direct. She is a muse, like, as you say, she inspires something in the kids, but she inspires them to be free. And so that is why I am going with Muse of Breath.
Well, I'm glad we all agreed on the class. I am about to fuck your whole shit up, though.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I have an idea.
So, for a bit of context, when Minty and I were watching this movie, I was blown away by how much this movie just... Like, this movie is a fairy tale. It is very explicitly a fairy tale, and she's a fairy to some extent. And, like, that's... There's a lot of, like, magical stuff going on in this movie that, like, just part of the setting. It's just a magical realism setting, and that, like, it's the suspension of disbelief is never burst because we see her in a cloud at the beginning and we know what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But Mary Poppins absolutely shatters, well, it's not that she shatters suspension of disbelief, but she kind of, like, we have to show her putting on her makeup in a cloud at the beginning, because otherwise she is so different from literally the entire setting. It's wacky. There is a man who shoots a cannon off twice a day for funsies in the neighborhood. But, and like, Bert's still around there hanging around in there off doing his own little magical things, presumably, or like thinking about it. But Mary Poppins is like confounding when she shows up. She does not explain things. She explicitly does not explain things. She twists things to make reality go her way. And practically perfect people never let sentiment muddle their thinking. And I did pick up on that, limits her emotional attachment for everyone's sake, is how she puts it. She blows in, she changes everything, and she blows out. And she kind of drives people crazy. Like, we just kept saying that over and over again when we were watching this show. Like, she's just, she comes in and she screws everybody's stuff up. And I kind of have her as, like, there weren't actually any consequences or too many improvements for everybody at the end. Like, it, maybe this is because of revisiting the movie as a jaded adult, but it struck me that, like, there was a temporary betterment for everyone involved, and particularly Mr. Banks got a freaking promotion. But, like, I think Minty pointed out when we were watching it, like, dude had, like, a panic attack at work and then basically had a manic episode all night. He wasn't having a great time of it. I'm wondering exactly how well he's going to be after that. Having that scene suddenly recontextualized as, like, a mental health crisis, I was like, huh. We're gonna gloss right over that, huh? Between that and, like, her trickster goddess vibes, I thought about breath, I thought about hope, but I went with Muse of Rage.
Ah, I knew it. I fucking knew it. I fucking knew that was who you're going with. Oh my, I see it.
Which is why I have the story centered around an axis of rage and hope. Like, the confoundingness of reality. Because I think it's important that she bends reality to her will. Like, I think it's important that she looked at reality and was like, no, that's not, like, good enough. I need things to go a certain way in order to get the results I want. I just kind of need the wind to blow everybody away. I need to be able to fly on an umbrella with no wind. The wind imagery is a lot, but there's also, like, she's got wind imagery and space imagery and some hope going on. And she, like, encompasses enough overlap. For me, it's more about the confusion and absolutely tipping the table over and looking at you like a cat and going, well, we got to improve it now. That sort of vibe. I'm like, you're a rage player.
As we were starting to record this episode, I was literally thinking in my brain, because the initial idea that I had around this story, I was like, yeah, it's breath, right? It's all about freeing the kids. And then I don't know who it was, but somebody in the Discord copy pasted what rage was. And I started thinking about rage. And then I went, oh, fuck. And I don't like it.
The thing that intrigues me about this is that, like, this is the maybe the first time I've seen a character that I have pinned as rage coded, and they're an explicit protagonist character that's, like, good. And I'm enjoying that. I think it's really neat to see the way rage as an aspect can be leveraged in a positive way, because you wouldn't expect that from the aspect. But I also recognize that I did just associate her with clowns, so, like, I am sorry about that for the people who is that's not a thing that they like.
I mean, you say that, but she kind of is a clown
because she strikes me as a trickster goddess. I don't know. I don't want that to be it. They also there's like a pin board with a bunch of string on it. I'm looking at it. There's like a rage symbol in the center. I'm like, I don't like this.
I don't like it either, but you literally started saying that, and I was like, oh no, oh no. You're right. You're right.
I also don't like it, but I'm trying to think of arguments against it, and I'm kind of coming up blank. Like, I do think she leaves things better than she found them. I mean, even if it's, you know, subtle and not necessarily everything is explicitly clear. But, you know, just that scene of the Banks family is spending time together, all four of them, and doing something fun and frivolous. That is, like,
that's big for them.
It's implied that, like, they never do that. Like, the parents both have their own thing, and they just keep hiring nannies to make sure their kids don't die.
Yeah,
that's the first thing the kids ask for, isn't it? If their dad will help them fix their kite, and it takes until the end of the movie. Yeah, I think my watching this in 2020, when it was made 50 years ago,
oh gosh,
might be affecting my read of the film a little bit, because, like, it's set in the 1910s, and, like, that's a pre-irony setting. Like, not entirely, like, the concept of dramatic irony or whatever existed, but, like, that's a pre-World War II setting. It's a pre-World War I setting. We're before a lot of, like, jaded attitudes that showed up in the, like, cultural zeitgeist, so, like,
it's good to be an Englishman in 1910. King Edward's on the throne. It's the age of men.
Fuck. Knew that's what you were doing.
Sorry.
They're catchy.
That sums it up, though, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the attitude. Like,
they set the scene pretty much from the beginning.
I think you're right. I think more is better at the end of the movie than I'm giving it credit for, because I was too caught up on this dude had just had a panic attack.
Maybe it takes away a little bit the fact that Deus Ex Machina, like, oh, not only did you sacrifice your job for the sake of your family, but also here's your job back and it's better.
Yeah.
So it kind of, like, takes away, but I think, you know, it's a kid's movie. We're not supposed to read that much into it. I think just that final scene really shows that, like, this family understands that it's important to spend time together now.
Excuse me. This is a podcast where we overanalyze media and slap it into a different blender.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mary Poppins is a very serious, deep film.
It's a very serious, deep film about destroying a man's life and making it better because he needs to go fly a fucking kite.
Well, yeah, but that's, I mean, that is kind of what I've I was saying with the rage thing that, you know, rage is kind of destructive, but in like a, you know, forest fire kind of way where like it destroys the old to make room for the new and the better. So like, yes, she comes in and totally fucks up their lives, but that is how they're able to sort of come together as a family.
It wasn't panning out. The status quo was not panning out.
No.
It wasn't working for anybody, and they were just going to sit there and spin in their little circles until something happened.
Yeah.
Also, you did change my mind. I did have Lord, and you changed my mind to Muse. And I was like, that makes way, way more sense. So you did have me on that. Because I was like, she does command, but I was like, wait. Like, the whole point of the other side of the masterclass is that both of them command.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, everything she does for others, you know, even though she definitely has her sassy moments where, you know, she's not the most humble person, but, you know, her role is to come in and fix families and then leave and go fix the next family. So to put it very simply, fix families.
Okay, so Bert, I think we have Mary Poppins, Bert, Mr. and Mrs. Banks, Jane and Michael.
I would like to go last because I too have a canon.
Okay, I'll go first, then we'll do me, Sylph, and then Minty. All right, so Bert reminds adults that they can still have fun. He, like, that, I mean, in particular, that speech to Mr. Banks, but, like, he's... I mentioned during the film that the sweeps had, like, a Lost Boys thing going on, but he definitely has a, like, spirit of childhood captured in an adult vessel sort of thing going on. He acts as, like, a working-class person as a servant for richer people, so he kind of he has a similar role as Mary Poppins in terms of that's how he's engaging with people, but he's invested in having fun. He also has a lot of different ventures to make money, kind of just by sheer brute force of diversity. He's just like, well, it's raining, it's time to sell hot chestnuts, because that's what everybody wants right now. And like, he's just like, all right, well, stuff will just keep going well if I keep hopping between stuff, and I keep believing that's going to be okay. And I made him a maid of hope.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Hope, I think, is a very... For me, for Bert, hope is a very strong second choice. And I was actually, when I was watching this last night with my partner, he kept trying to argue that Bert is a hope player. So I think the main reason I didn't go with that is because I have a different hope player and I don't like to duplicate. So yeah, definitely I like that. But what I said for Bert, I think that he is very defined by his loyalty, especially to Mary Poppins. You know, we obviously don't know their backstory, but she shows up and he's just like immediately, oh, Mary Poppins, you know, this person that I think the world of and will do anything for. I'm so glad you're here. I think he also is a very selfless person and does a lot for others rather than for himself. Or he's selfless, and he, I think, is also a natural leader. You see with the chimney sweeps that even though presumably he's only been a chimney sweep for one day, he goes up and leads them in an incredible song and dance number on the rooftops of London. So that was cool. And then mainly, I think the fact that he's the one who ultimately convinces the kids first to have sympathy for their father and put themselves in his shoes. And then also a few scenes later is the one to really convince Mr. Banks finally that a relationship with his children is more important than his job or his status or his money or the things that he is worried about. So he also, I think, has a very key role in bringing this family together. So I decided that he is a knight of blood.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Assigning him car cat, I see.
But not really.
The full cat. Okay. Oh, wait, we didn't do Dreaming Moons.
Oh, I had him as Prospect, so he is definitely car
Mary
cat.
Mary Poppins is a Durst player, and
yep.
I That's will what fight I said, literally yeah. anybody on this.
I don't think you'll have to fight anybody on that.
Oh, thank heavens.
No, I said Durst for Mary.
She's just got the vibes.
Oh gosh, I guess that's me, isn't it? All right, so everybody batten down the hatches. Grab everything.
Burton down the hatches.
Burton down the hatches. I'm gonna blow literally every single thing that we've got here out of the water, hopefully. I have been ruminating on this, thinking about this the entire time. Because here's the thing about Bert, is that he is, at least in the role of the film, Mary Poppins' counterpart. For everything that is fantastical about Mary Poppins, he is usually down there that is something that is down to earth trying to do something. Like in the scene where they're trying to jump in the chalk paintings. This is something that I have been thinking about for a while, is that Bert is physically incapable of doing it. Why? I'm not entirely sure. The moment that Bucky, like, while we were watching it last night, like, said, oh, this is just a movie about Faye, I was like, oh, shit. Suddenly, like, everything makes sense now. All of the puzzle pieces that I had around Bert, because he kind of, like, eluded me for a while, just, like, fell into place. And when it comes down to thing, Bert commands the kids, Bert commands the father, Bert commands a group of chimney sweeps to all step in time.
Oh, my God.
Which is why I am pegging him as a Lord of Life.
Huh.
Huh.
Yeah, see, tiny target at the end. I'm firing my cannon here. He commands the rich people. He begs them for money. And when it comes down to it, that is where his livelihood goes. But, like, money is what he is surrounded by. He is constantly trying to make money from his latest scheme. He's constantly trying to make money from chimney sweeping, from paintings. He throws his hat down. Anything that he's possibly got. Like, this guy is heavy money coded, and that is, like, a huge thing of life. And, like, his entire thing is about telling a lot of people things to do. Like, that moment where he's, like, trying to teach the kids how to pop in. Now, I originally had him as a maid of life, but I'm not too sure about that. I feel like Lord of Life fits a lot better because he is, like, Mary Poppins' counterpart, where she is huge and flighty and trying to, like, keep everything down where it is. Whereas Mary Poppins is trying to, like, destroy things to make them better. Bert is trying to keep things the same to make them better for himself. And that is why he is a Lord of Life to me.
I like the life aspect. I was sitting there going, which one's the money one? I completely neglected to think about life. So, like, I do agree with that. I also do agree with the importance of Bert to the story. We need him to be juxtaposed against Mary Poppins because she's not the straight man to his goofy necessarily, but they play off of each other and complement each other. So I can see why you give them complimentary classes. I'm not quite sure about the commanding, though, if only because he seems to do more, like, coaxing and suggesting than outright commanding. Like, he has the opposite sort of tack as Mary Poppins, even in that. He's telling people things, but it's more that he's, like, phrasing it so they'll come around and less that... Like, when he's talking to... Both when he's talking to the kids and when he's talking to Mr. Banks, they, like, say something. He's like, oh, well, what about this? And he sort of, like, attempts to reframe it and recontextualize it rather than outright saying what he thinks they should do. Or, like, he starts trying to recontextualize stuff. So, like, I'm...
Witch of Life?
I like passive servant class. Like, I do like Knight. Knights do a lot of juxtaposing and being a foil, and he does explicitly serve in a lot of different ways.
Hmm.
He's a servant in a bunch of different ways because of his working class jobs.
Hmm.
He's like a shoulder to not a shoulder to cry on, but he is a place of confidence for the kids and for Mr. Banks. Like, Mr. Banks is reassured and bolstered by his words to an extent.
Okay. I think I see what you're getting at there, and
I'm circling around something. I don't know what it is yet, though.
I mean, like, knights and lords can be confused with each other, I think.
Yeah, it's almost like knights often are apprenticed underneath lords. Like, there's this related mythological roles. Soph, I've been going for a minute. What do you think?
I would be also hesitant about lord again, just because... I don't know. I guess I'm thinking a little bit more literally, and I just don't think that he's, in terms of, like, his power, if nothing else, I don't really think he's at the level with Mary Poppins. But then I think, like, this is a really weird, like, random thing, but I keep thinking about how at the very beginning, he looks into the camera and starts talking to us. And leads us to 17 Cherry Tree Lane, And then, you know, that's the only scene in which he is like the actual narrator of the movie, but it is in there. For pretty much that reason alone, I'm thinking that's kind of a lordly thing to do, to have command over the movie.
He sort of has command of the chimney. He doesn't have command of the chimney sweeps, but they all respect him. And they point out that he dances with Mary Poppins. Out of everyone, he's lucky to get to dance with Mary Poppins because she's like out of the reach of everyone but him.
Oh, no. I think... No, I'm reconsidering this now. My brain just like, threw a wild dart that said Bard of Life. And I was like, no. Well,
He would wear a codpiece. He would wear a codpiece.
And he does kind of destroy. But the thing about bards, specifically in Homestuck and in most pieces of media, is that their power ebbs and flows with the narrative of the story. And he does, when Mary Poppins is on the screen, he bows to her. But when he himself is by himself on the screen, he is excellent. And like, he did address the camera directly.
He's an ultimate knight. He's still got the knight stuff going on, but he's that the him being like an like a character that kind of is breaking canon does a lot to explain his like odd fey attributes and childish attitude and ability to participate in the world breaking magic things. He has a solid footing in this world. He knows how it works. He knows how Mary Poppins works. You're right. He can't jump through the painting, but he knows how to do it. Like he has come up with a technique that he thinks to explain to the kids, even if that's not exactly what Mary Poppins does.
Okay. So Dick Van Dyke plays two roles inside this film. Two roles.
Yes.
And Old Self is about breaking the fourth wall.
Are we about to get meta?
And that role that the second character plays inside this story is to die so that Mr. Banks can get his job back, thus making his life better.
Oh my gosh.
He also, like, Dick Van Dyke also plays a character, like, that character, like, is absolutely ridiculous. That character also has the child at heart thing going on. That's just kind of what this actor does.
And also is in charge of the bank, which is a very lifey thing.
Because those characters are inexorably connected because of the actor link. Much in the same way Homestuck...
Oh, this is too meta for Mary Poppins.
Well, think about what Homestuck does and how it connects its characters. It reproduces, like, characters. There's slightly different visual representations of, like we took our Jegbert sprite and we, like, we put different glasses on it and longer hair and it's Jade. We, like, different glasses and blonde hair and it's Dave. No glasses and different blonde hair and it's Rose. And, like, they all kind of complement each other and build off of each other. So we are therefore working with an inherent relationship between the Dick Van Dykes in this movie. You're right, it is awfully meta for Mary Poppins, but that's what we're fucking here for.
I mean, are we wrong?
No.
The answer is no.
I do actually like the idea of, you know, having a life player be the one who is the, you know, poor, humble street urchin, jack of all trades.
So pages and knights are related, and knights are less of a well of untapped potential and more people who are grinding away at their potential but aren't going to, like, see massive gains from it. So, like, yeah, knight. Like, that would be something that would happen to a knight of life, isn't it? Because, like, we've the life players we've seen are a thief, a witch, and a maid. And those life players are accruing wealth, literally made of it, or magically imbued with it. We've never seen somebody who's serving it or serving through it.
Are we good on Knight of Life?
I am. I think Ultimate Knight of Life specifically.
Yeah.
I think you're spot on with Knight. And I could go on Blood or Life as the thing. I do think that the life was a really good choice, but also like there are still some blood things that fit. Like the his close relationship with Mary Poppins is still important. But is that encompassed by the servant nature of the night class, or does the specific relationship that they have, is that more than just he's devoted to her? I think that's a word that we could use regardless of like whatever the hell we get to in the shipping section if we decide we want to do that.
I mean, haven't the knights that we've seen already like have strong familial bonds? Dave Carcat,
Latula.
Dave like has like a very, very strong bond with, I mean, at the very beginning of Homestuck, his brother, and then at the very end of Homestuck, his other brother, who's just a different version of that brother. And like Carcat has, I think it's like a huge relationship with his crab dad. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I feel like there was something there.
Yeah,
it's that. And also, like, is he the linchpin of his friend group? There isn't really one single linchpin of that group.
He is when they first enter their game. Like, Carcat is the leader of, I think, the red team. And I feel like they're, you know, I think part of the knightiness of it is that he's, once they're actually, like, in the game and on the meteor, when he sort of realizes, like, what being a leader entails, he's sort of, like, very hesitant to sort of step up and take that responsibility. But I think it is sort of implied several times that like he's their leader. So I think that's mostly the blood aspect, but then also the
knight thing's still there.
You know, the knight class is the willingness to step up and do what needs to be done.
Yeah, and that does sort of tie back with the he's like, well, all right, time to heat up the old chestnuts. Time to go on to the next grind. Yeah, Night of Life. I think ultimate Night of Life. That's the first time we've given somebody an ultimate characterization, but it's also the first time that we've had a piece of media where somebody looks at the fucking camera and is like, oh, it's nice to see you there. Would you like to give me some money? Oh, you can't give me any money. Okay, then.
I can't give you any money through the TV screen.
I would like to. Hey, welcome to the middle of the episode. This is the bit where I tell you about some cool projects we're a part of, let you know if anyone has any projects they want to share with us, and give you a little spiel about what Will at Homestuck does besides this podcast. First, if you weren't aware, we stream fanfiction from Homestuck and other fandoms every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/willithomestuck. I also try to stream Homestuck fan games on Wednesday mornings and do a chill no-mic stream on Fridays, the keyword being try. Find our full schedule at our Twitch channel. Next, here's some projects we like and an ad break if we have a sponsor. Hey, we have a musical album we think you'd like to check out. Hit it, JoJo.
Now, after fan outcry and popular demand, the second installment in the Funk McLovin collection is here, Class Act. Class Act will feature songs from the Song A Day Project, as well as new original music. And for viewers on Bandcamp, there will be a B-side to Class Act featuring various Funk McLovin cover songs. All your favorites will be there, like Japanese Spider Crab.
The Japanese Spider Crab!
Eight legs on each of my sides, and two nice long claws to boot. I'm the motherfucking Japanese Spider Crab! Don't try to tell me I ain't cute! I'm the longest arthropod.
You're at the ocean, but you're not alone. And many more.
Support Class Act by visiting funkmclovin.bandcamp.com. That's funkmclovin.bandcamp.com, or search for Funk McLovin on Spotify or Apple Music to partake in this experience.
Thanks. I hope you enjoy.
New Game Plus is a Homestuck fan visual novel project that asks, what if Earthsea were communist, actually? The intention is to explore the radical possibilities entailed within the creation of an entirely new world, and how a bunch of teenagers from capitalist societies at varying degrees of dystopia would deal with this new world. Applications for writers, artists, musicians, programmers, and pinch hitters are open from July 25th, 2020 until October 1st, 2020. Please visit twitter.com/HSNewGamePlus or hsnewgameplus.tumblr.com for more details. We'd also like to thank our class-specting undergrads, I Think You're Pretty Neat, and Sylph of Breath, as well as our Dreaming Moon scholars, Fleece, Kylo Ren, Starshine, and Shane, for helping out the show on Patreon. If you'd like to get a shout-out on the podcast, access to bonus episodes and outtakes, and more, please visit patreon.com/willithomestuck. And now, back to the episode.
Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Yes. Do we want to start with the kids or do we want to start with the parents?
I'd like to start with the parents.
Yeah, they've got stronger characterization. No offense.
Yeah, the kids were a little hard. It's just like, they're just kids.
They are kids. Let's do Mr. Banks then. I think I started last time, so let's, Minty, you start this time.
Okay, I am not too strong on this, but the connections is what I have are a little clear. When it comes down to, like, things, Mr. George Banks does not like it when people are free. He likes them to be under his thumb. Like, one of the very first, like, introductions of Mr. Banks that we kind of, like, see in this film is after Mrs. Banks is done singing Sister Suffragette, and then we hear something along the lines of what I think it's the cause infuriates Mr. Banks. Like, he doesn't believe women are capable of voting. He wants his children to be very, very orderly, very, very perfect, very, very together. But his ultimate role inside this story is not entirely in, like, that rigidity, that delight, that hard boundary on rules and order. It's ultimately for him to kind of, like, realize that he himself just needs to kind of, like, chill out a little bit and go fly a fucking kite with his kids. And when it comes down to that, like, that kind of, to me, feels like a little bit of Paige energy. And I'm not too keen on this classback. His aspect is very, very hard for me to figure out. Sylph, I'm 99% sure you'll probably, like, have a stronger thing. But again, I kind of just went with, like, he's got huge ties to money, everything inside of his life. I think I've showed my hand at this point, is, like, been, like, his parents have been life, his, like, hold on, huh? Sorry, I'm just, like, hearing myself talk right now, and I just entirely rethinked what I think this is. I think he's an heir of life. He ultimately inherits the life advice from Bert to kind of just be like, hey, yeah, you know what? I should just chill the fuck out. Let's go fly a kite. And so,
can I?
Do you want to go next?
Yes, actually, because I have. So you've convinced me on air, because I think he's handling a lot of, like, responsibility that he's been handed that he thinks he needs to perpetuate. I would like to argue that it's not life; it's doom.
Ooh.
Because specifically because of the ordered systems, he is invested in his systems and the status quo and the way things are supposed to go inside these systems, and specifically numbers, right up until the point where he has, like, a mental breakdown. And then he works in the middle management at the bank. He does end up in upper management, but, like, Doom also has, like, an association with, like, not quite being at the top. Like, Solix and Mituna as Goldbloods are, like, inherently tied to lower class subjugation. So, like, despite that coding, though, I think it would be interesting to give it to Mr. Banks, especially because we just gave Bert life.
I love that. Gosh.
I did diagnose him with Mituna.
I mean, oh, Mituna does have a mental breakdown and then just kind of, like, chill out a little bit, and so does Mr. Banks.
Damn it. God damn it.
Oh, man.
All right, Sylph.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know. I feel like I just didn't think as hard about this as you guys, probably just because I don't have that great an attention span. And also, I think because this movie is so just, like, lighthearted in my mind that, like, I would never even, even though I literally signed up to like do a podcast about diving deep into these pieces of media and homestucking them, I guess my inclination would never be to like dive that deep into Mary Poppins. But anyway, so yeah, I went with Life just because I think that like everything sort of defining his character is like his job at the bank, you know, money and status and worldly things, and those are what's important to him. I mean, his name is literally Banks, so take what you will from that. But I said Prince of Life. I just think he's very princely because he's very much like a controlling and destructive person, at least his first, with his family and with all the nannies and basically everyone. He wants to rule over the money and the status and the social order and all of that. And then I guess sort of at the end, when he has his breakthrough, he basically destroys his connection to all of those things for the sake of his family. So first he's destroying his family through all this life-coded stuff, and then he destroys his connection to the life-coded stuff.
Yeah, I like that. That is really good.
Yeah, see, that's interesting that you peg him as a prince, because my initial thing that I wrote down for him was Prince of Breath.
I thought you were going to say breath when you started talking about like flying the kite and, you know, inhibiting people's freedoms. I really thought you were going to say breath.
I don't want to assign him June Egbert. No, absolutely not. This man is not good enough to be assigned June.
I would agree with that.
I kind of like the doom aspect, but I'm looking over like the extended Zodiac page and it says like the doombound won't fix you. They aren't healers. They are commiserators. And at what point does like he ever really like commiserate with anybody inside this film?
Yeah. I mean, Bert, you know, when Bert is giving his speech to the kids in the alley, like his whole point is literally like your poor dad has nobody he can go to. He has nobody that he can tell his troubles to. He's alone.
Oh.
We should swap it then. We should make Bert an ultimate knight of doom, and we should make Mr. Banks should definitely be a life player, because like I'm thinking about the contrast between like Bert and Mr. Banks, and like there's no way doom and life are on an axis. They're opposing each other. And like if we give Bert doom, that makes more sense with the way his character's set up, and you can give the character that Dick Van Dyke plays,
Mr. Dawes Sr.,
you can give him an inversion.
I see that, but we did just say that his entire character arc is like defined by loneliness, and that's space. He's not very creative, though.
I mean, hey, it's lonely at the top, baby. Like, it could still be a life thing.
That's true.
I mean, honestly, like, again, thinking you were going to go with breath, like, I could see an argument for Prince of Breath because, like, he destroys the freedom of his kids and his wife and is also very lonely.
And the scene at the end of the film does involve, like,
he flies a kite. Like, that's the most breath-coded thing you could do.
And the scene where he's getting fired is where he's, like, breaking that situation to get his freedom to serve himself.
Yeah, but...
The claspect that I threw inside the garbage, is it now being unwrapped and, like, oh, yes, this is a treasure after all?
Well, no, I would not say heir of breath, but I would say maybe prince of breath.
Prince does fit him very well.
Prince does fit him very well.
Yeah, he's very Aridan in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Given the addition of the destructive class, which of those aspects that we've been circling around makes sense in that new context?
I would say still probably either life or breath.
He doesn't kill anyone, though. And I feel like a Prince of Life would have to kill someone.
It's a Disney movie from the 60s.
People have died in Disney movies.
I mean, yes, if you're being very literal about it.
They did think he died in the film the next morning. Because he did just kind of fuck up.
That's true.
I am kind of coming on to Prince of Life. That is very good.
That's true. I that was a something I didn't remember. And I even said, like, oh, that's kind of dark, when they were like, oh, well, check the river. He might have jumped in. Like,
yeah. And like,
whoa, this is a kid's movie.
The active passive sort of like dynamic isn't really like, oh, are they actively doing something? Or are they passively doing? It's more of like where the focus is on. Like, if it's active, it's usually on themselves. If it's passive, it's usually on others. And so when it comes down to like Mr. Banks' like whole ideals and stuff, and when he's like trying to destroy, it's mostly for himself so that his child can inherit his legacy at the role of the bank. Because he's like, ah, yes, young Michael, my father served in this, and my grandfather, and someday you will too.
He's not just doing the inheriting, he's also passing it on.
Yeah.
Thereby giving him more of a noble status than, like, whatever we were saying before at night. Yeah, Air also has, like, the nobility sort of thing going on, but, like, the prince has it going a couple ways, because people serve princes, even as princes are underneath kings.
Yeah.
Do we want to go with Prince of Life?
Do we want to go Prince of Life and change Bert to Knight of Doom?
I mean, we can have doubles.
I'm having trouble wrapping my head around Bird is a Doom player.
Yeah.
I just really associate Doom with, like, Law and Order. And that's not Bird. He's very, like, easygoing and I don't know. But also, at the same time, like, I get seeing, like, Bert and Mr. Banks as, like, sort of opposing forces in this, but I really think more of, like, Mary Poppins and Mr. Banks as being, like, the primary opposing forces. So I don't necessarily think Bert needs to have, like, a corresponding aspect to Mr. Banks. Like, I do see, like, I see it, but I don't think it's necessary.
Can I make an argument for that by saying that it's less that Mary Poppins and Mr. Banks are opposing, it's more that Mary Poppins is a character who's there, and Bert is a character who's willing to go along with what she's doing, and Mr. Banks is a character who, like, wants her to act in a certain way, and they both attempt to exert influence on Mary Poppins in a certain way, but Bert is just kind of willing to roll with it, where Mr. Banks is, like, trying to control what she's doing. And it's more about both of their relationships to her than it is about her relationship with just either one of them.
Okay, yeah, I like that, actually. I see what you're saying. That, like, Bert is kind of acts as, like, Mary's representative amongst, like, the mortals.
Not only that, but from the official extended Hive Swap page about Doom, at their best, they are wise, kind, and non-judgmental.
That sounds like Bert.
At their worst, they are bitter, resentful, and fatalistic. Tell me that at their best does not show, like, the advice that Bert gives to Mr. Banks, and then at the worst shows that old fucking man that worked for the bank who died of laughter.
But the thing is that if we're talking about at our best and at our worst, we are also talking a bit about class-spect inversion, and Doom and Life are opposing each other. So again, if we're giving Mr. Banks a destructive class, why don't we give him Prince of Doom? Because he's got Doom coding, but ultimately going along with Doom does not serve him, and he ends up destroying it. Whereas Bert does end up serving Life, but, like, because he's... not just because we've given him the ultimate status and he's kind of aware of what's going on, but also, like, we could also make an argument that the movie doesn't want us to consider, like, the banker character to be better than Bert, but the setting tells us that Dawes Sr. has been sitting on this money and hasn't really had to work, and Bert has worked every single day of his life. I don't know. That argument wasn't convincing me, but I'm also like, I like Doom Bert, but I also kind of like Doom Banks. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like an ultimate player, though, would probably understand the role in a story that they need to play, and play both the incredibly rich off their ass banker and the down on their luck poor guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like Doom kind of works with that, and I guess Doom does kind of, like, work for Mr. Banks as, oh gosh, is it just Dick Van Dyke all the way down?
I do like Prince of Life for Banks, and I think that we should give Bert Doom, if only because You've convinced me on Bert with the bit from the High Swap Extended Universe. I'm gonna err on the side of like the thematic stuff that's surrounding those aspects, and like one of them is that Doom players are poor and Life players are rich.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, I can get behind that.
On to Mrs. Banks then?
On to Mrs. Banks then. Who wants to go first with or dear Mrs. Banks?
I'll go first this time. I think that, and just sort of a disclaimer, I think that the role that Mrs. Banks' relationship to the suffragist movement, it does not, I guess, I do not condone the way that they sort of frame the suffragist movement and feminism in this movie, but just for the sake of the role that it plays for her character and the movie, you know, it's portrayed as not really a good thing. And, you know, Walt Disney was not a very good person. So just putting that all aside as a disclaimer. So I think, first of all, that Winifred Banks can very much be described as pure of heart and dumb of ass.
Oh, yes.
She is singularly focused on her cause and very chaotic and careless in her pursuit of it. She's optimistic, but she also can very much be a doormat. You know, when Mr. Banks comes in, suddenly it's, oh, yes, dear, you should write the ad for the new nanny because you are smarter and better than me. And she is also just very focused on herself and her cause and not anyone or anything else, including her family or her children. So I decided that she is a page of hope.
Oh.
She is a Jake English.
that's where I ended up, too.
Okay, good.
Then time for me to give my shitpost class.
Yeah, I don't think I had much different before you give your shitpost class. I was like, the setting wants you to read her as naive and ineffective. She comes across as flighty, uninterested in working for her family, but in performative... She's performatively invested in women's rights. Like, it's
a fun time for her.
If you remade Mary Poppins for the modern age, which is a thing that hasn't happened before, and by this I specifically mean you take the whole plot part and parcel, not the kids growing up, and you just plop it in like 2020. She's like a white feminist who like doesn't understand that she's not like she would wear a pussy hat to the women's march and like not critically examine that at all. I also disagree with the way that like feminism is represented in this movie, but like the vibe that I got, that like I interpreted in my like progressive brain, is like, oh, the point is that she's more interested in the performance than she is the outcome.
Yeah,
which is pretty hopey.
It is very hopey. She's very much a page of hope.
Yeah. All right, give us your shitpost class.
Oh, I just called her a maid of breath because I thought it was funny to call her a maid because she had two maids and a nanny and she can't keep any of them. She's flighty. She's like absolutely nowhere. She's like all over the place.
Flighty broad and her horse shit.
Flighty broads and their snarky horse shit.
It's very unfortunate how she gets portrayed inside of this movie, because I am probably not going to touch Mary Poppins Returns. I imagine it's probably not all that good. I don't know. It's just kind of like she is a character that exists, and I understand that she exists, and I called her a maid of breath. Because I was like, ah, yes, she's focused on the freedom of other people and is dedicating herself to the cause. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I really, really like the maid class.
Maid class is so good.
Every single time I do one of these episodes, I have a maid and I make several maids. This is the one that I don't think I did.
Spoilers, I have a maid coming up.
Ooh, intriguing. I could be convinced for Maid of Hope, I guess, but I think the page in particular, like... She's naive, or at least the story wants you to believe she's naive.
Yeah.
That kind of has Paige stamped all over it.
I mean, we've all seen Optimistic Duelist's like essay on why Jake English is the coolest character ever, right? About how Jake English is actually kind of a genius and is very smart at manipulating other people. I don't know, that does kind of like match up with her because of like how she is manipulating her husband around this movement or something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Go watch Optimistic Duelist's video on Jake English. It's very good. I've watched it like three times.
I should do that. I'll do that later.
I think I've read has or possibly some other people talk about that idea, but I don't think I've explicitly watched the video on it, so I'll have to go dig it up.
Oh, it changed the way I looked at Jake. Holy shit.
I haven't watched that video, but yes, I agree that Jake is smarter than he appears.
What's the phrase? Jake English contains multitudes, unfortunately.
Yes. And I do have a special place in my heart for Jake English.
He's just a cool action hero, man.
For reasons that correspond to that, but...
Should we move on with... What was it? Not Made of Hope. A Page of Hope. I have nothing more to add on this character.
Prospect Dreamer?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Mr. Banks? I feel like he's also Prospect?
I said Durst, actually.
Ooh.
I said Durst, but I'm not super confident.
Yeah, I think he could go either way. I think, like, because he's nervous.
I mean, the whole not seeing past his own nose thing, that's pretty Prospect, actually. So I might change my mind.
He's just got big Jane vibes to me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna switch to Prospect.
Too. All right. Jane and Michael.
Which one do we want to do first?
Jane's older.
This is true, so we should start with Jane.
I don't know.
Yeah, fuck it. So they don't have a lot of characterization?
Yeah.
I think the couple of the biggest differences between them are Jane, like, leads them when it seems to have led them in writing the advertisements, and Jane can do the snap in Spoonful of Sugar. And Michael is headstrong about wanting to feed the birds, and he cannot do the snap. And that's kind of most of the differences between them. Also, they're different genders.
Should we just do them both together? Because they kind of... So, like, say your class picks for both of them, and then we'll each go down and do that.
For Jane... Oh, should we start with Jane?
Or should we do it separately?
Let's start with Jane. I've got a little bit for her.
Okay.
So I have Jane down as an heir of hope because, like, when it comes down to it, Mary Poppins imparts a belief to most of the characters inside of, like, this movie. And Jane is kind of like the one who accepts the fact that of Mary Poppins' worldview. She is the one who is capable of snapping. She is the one who writes the little advertisement. But ultimately speaking, these two kids play a passive role on the story. I feel like Jane is an heir of hope because, like, she kind of, like, pulls in the hope from Mary Poppins, I guess. But again, there really isn't much to these characters.
Yeah.
I had, like, this differences between them, and then, like, both of the kids are mischievous, curious, sincere, naive. They're interested in play and being kind, and, like, they get kind of what they want, but I don't think that they learn a lot. I think they learn how to be, like, nicer and more respectful, but, like, in specific ways. And I don't think that, like, children need to be respectful, but, like, in the specific, like, pick up after yourself kind of ways.
God, they're consorts, aren't they?
Oh, God. Maybe.
I mean, that's the thing about kids, is, like, they're not old enough to be going through a character journey yet.
Yeah.
Like, they need more complex characterization for me in order to, like, have a class. I think we could potentially give them, like, aspect bounds, but I don't know about classes, because, like, we don't know what the hell they do with their lives yet. They're like 6 and 8.
Yeah, I only had Michael written down as life bound, and that was it. I was just like, I don't fucking know. This is a child.
Yeah, there's not a lot with these. I imagine, Self, you have a bit more, because I just don't have anything to contribute to this one, unfortunately.
I do have a little bit, but you're right that it's really hard to do these two, because not to bring too much outside influence in, but I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Saving Mr. Banks.
No.
Which is about the making of Mary Poppins. And sort of the whole point is that even though you think the movie, like, you know, the kids have more screen time, or I don't know, maybe they don't even, but it seems like it's a movie about Mary Poppins and these kids, but really, like, the moral of the story is that it's about Mr. Banks and his journey and his, you know, learning to value his family. So I think you're right that, like, the kids, you know, they're the cute kids that are necessary for the plot.
Yeah, they're kind of a vehicle for plot to happen.
Yeah, but I did give them Klaspecs. I'm not married to these again, but I feel like of the two of them, Jane is sort of, she's the older one, and I think she's sort of painted as like the one who's trying to be the practical one. You know, there's a few times where she sort of tries to keep Michael in check, and you know, she's still a little kid, so she's still sort of figuring out how to do this. But I think that she tries to sort of do the right practical thing and become a practical person. So I said Maid of Mind.
Oh, okay.
And then, well, do we want to talk about Jane or can I go right into Michael? Because they're sort of tied together.
I've got nothing for these kids. I'm sorry.
You can go right into Michael.
So, yeah, of the two of them, Michael is, you know, he's the younger one. So he's the boy and, you know, gender roles. So he's sort of more of like the little adorable rascal. And also, I think Moore is trying to find himself and also find his place in the world and in his family. So I made him a rogue of heart.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a little nepeta.
There's a part of me...
I do like that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that Jane's a Durst player and Michael's a Prospect player.
Yes, I agree.
But I'm very inclined to agree with you on both of those, if only because, like, I feel like I neglect the mind class, and they're kind of outside of the axes of the story that we've been talking about, so it kind of makes sense that, like, they're outside of the, like, their aspects are a couple that we haven't considered at all yet while discussing this story.
I didn't do it as much in this, but when I'm classbecting, I really like sort of taking two characters that are very connected and giving them opposing aspects. And I think just in this, the fact that like these two characters collectively are the character of the kids, I think it's especially appropriate to give them those opposing aspects.
I like that a lot, but Michael does single-handedly destabilize the entire British economy.
Maybe he's the prince of life.
Well, so here's the thing about that is that like his father is a prince of life, and what do like people with ancestors usually do is that they role play after their children. This is something that I had written down on my page.
Oh, fuck.
That was just kind of like more evidence for Mr. Banks being a prince of life, is that his child literally just kind of like fucked over the entire economy.
God, that's pretty good.
I usually don't even think about the whole role-playing thing, but would you say that Michael is role-playing a prince of life?
Absolutely.
And is actually something else?
Yeah, because that would... I like your rogue of heart, and I think that he could be role-playing a prince of like life, actually a rogue of heart, because like he, I don't know, his big moment is when he steals something back, so I think giving him, he's a little mischievous little type, like I think giving him rogue was spot on, but Minty's also right about him like looking for his place in the world, or wait, no, that was you, looking for his place in the world, and that
is a very heart thing to do.
It's a very heart thing to do, and having him role play as his ancestor also, like, ties into that.
Okay, I like that.
I do like Rogue of Heart. It's very good. Are there any more characters in this movie that deserve a Klaspect?
Probably not, but I gave them some anyway.
Admiral Boom deserves a shitpost one, just because.
You're goddamn right he does.
Seer of Time, because he always knows what time it is.
Yep, nailed it. Uncle Albert is definitely also rage bound.
I said Bard of Rage.
You're just gonna go full Gamzee. Okay, that's fair.
Just full Gamzee. He is a clown.
He is a clown.
He's chaotic and destructive because of his unchecked emotions.
His words did in fact make an old man die.
That is true. I didn't even think of that.
God. Alright, I'm done with that. How about Ellen and the cook?
I actually didn't do them.
They don't do anything. They just...
Yeah, I don't.
I wanted to. I had one aspect left after the ones I did, and I realized, like, oh, Ellen is a bigger character than I remembered, but she just didn't fit it. So I gave that. That's a very shitposty one that I did.
What about the dog?
That was my shitpost one. He's a Mage of Void, because Void is what I had left. And because he somehow knows things mysteriously, even though he's a dog.
You are right, and I hate that.
Very good.
I was like, who's the void player? Andrew.
Okay, so that's class specting done, right? We don't need to do any more. Shipping? Or...
Okay.
That sure was the first hour and a half of recording.
Sorry.
This is good.
No, you're fine. This is great. I like having a good, meaty discussion. Shipping.
Mary Poppins is an auspice to every single person around her other than Bert. They're definitely pale.
And they're pale in my onion.
Yeah. I don't think this is a terribly shippable piece of media.
No, I don't think so. Everyone's either married children or ethereal fey women, so like...
I mean, I think Mary and Bert as Moirales is kind of cute and sort of makes sense.
They have romantic tension, like in that one musical number with the penguins where Bert is just like listing off the names of a bunch of girls, Mary Poppins gets like super fucking pissed. It's great. I love that moment.
But then before that, her whole verse of that song is just like friend zoning Bert.
It really is.
It's just like, Oh, Bert, I love spending time with you because I know you would never hit on me.
Holy shit.
Again, that's why when we were watching them glide across the water, I'm like, this relationship is MLMWLLW solidarity because they're just. That's literally, she's like, I am gay, and you are gay, and I know you will not hit on me, and we are best friends. And Bert's like, okay, I'm bi, but like, sure. We could be friends, I'm good. Like, I'm good being friends with you, because I'm not an asshole.
She is a lesbian icon, now that I think about it. No, not an icon, but she's definitely a lesbian.
Oh my gosh. I mean, again, because I still sort of think of this movie as I thought of it when I was 2 years old, that never would have occurred to me. But of course, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, again, there's a big difference between like watching it when I was eight and then not touching it for almost two decades and then watching it again.
I have never seen this movie before in my life, which is starting to become a pattern for me.
Intriguing. Okay, so fuck shipping. Is there a Vriska here?
The only person in this movie who is eligible for being a Vriska is Mary Poppins, and I like that.
Yeah, I have two people with Vriska question mark next to them, and one of them is Mary Poppins, and then, like, going down the list of what makes a Vriska, she doesn't fit a lot of them, but I just think she's the one with the irons in the fire. And that's sort of what I think of when I think of Vriska.
She walks into people's lives and she fucks everything up and then leaves. I don't know about you, and I know that's definitely not on the list of things for Vriskas, but like on the list of things Vriska would do, I feel like that's one of them.
Mary Poppins exists somewhere in between and above Vriska and Aranya both.
Yeah.
She's got some circuit things going on, but, like, I guess kind of, I might kind of point at Befaris Vriska, actually.
Mindfang?
Well, yes, but, like, the other one. Like, specifically Befaris Vriska, like, the Aranya's ancestor. Because, like, I know we don't know a lot about that particular, like, we know jack about the Dancestors, let alone their ancestors, but, like, that particular juxtaposition of, like, Vriska, but, like, better and an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I did also have a maybe Aranya, and that is Mrs. Banks, because I feel like she very much thinks she knows what she's doing, and
yeah,
she doesn't really.
I don't feel too strongly about either of them. I just don't think this film has a Vriska.
I don't either, but...
There's not a lot of women in, like, there's no nasty women in this movie. There's pleasant women.
Yeah.
Puts a bit of a damper on the Vriska thing. On the other hand, I still, like, we thought long and fucking hard about those class specs, though, so I'm fine with, like, skating over shipping and Vriska and going, those don't apply here.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's Mary fucking Poppins, which is definitely the way that you should always say the title of that movie, especially around children.
Mary fucking Poppins, everyone.
Mary fucking Poppins.
Practically perfect in every way.
practically fucking perfect in every way.
Exactly.
Sorry, I'm a sailor. Strap me to the top of a building and shoot me out of a cannon.
Is that it? Did we do the movie?
I think we did the movie, everybody.
Fuck yes.
Yay.
Well, I've been a spry young man disguised as an old man on wires being lifted up to the ceiling.
Oh yes, you need a second funny thing.
Oh, do we need another thing for this? I've been a little old bird woman.
I've been stuck in Bucky's basement for 3 years now. Please, please let me out.
Thanks for coming to the Mary Poppins episode. That was really fun, and I'm glad that we got around to this one, because that was
more fun than I was expecting.
Thank you.
That was a good one. Thank you again to Sylph of Breath for being our patron and for recommending this one and for appearing on the podcast, because I think not only were you our first patron, but you were the first person who I sidled up to on Twitter and was like, do you want to talk about classbecting on a podcast with
yeah,
me?
Yeah, because I was already doing the classbecks before Will at Homestuck was a thing.
So, yeah, thanks everybody for coming, and we'll see you when we do the part two episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. Please remember to also check out the donation links in the description and keep an eye out for ways you can contribute to your local community. If you like what you heard, follow us at WillItHomestuck on Twitter. If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon or Ko-fi, both of which are at WillItHomestuck. Don't forget to check out our weekly fanfiction streams at WillItHomestuck on Twitch, and you can even join in our community streams the first Monday of every month. We currently have a few episodes I'm not hosting in the works, so you'll either be getting Infinity Train Part 2 or Madoka Magica Part 1 next week. Stay tuned!